Thanks for joining us for a Monday morning Long Island edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking about two acquisitions for the Brooklyn Nets, one player returning, and one new stud center coming in. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks for joining us on the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years sweltering in the Arizona heat covering your Phoenix Suns, I am back in my native New York, but not in my native New York City, and that is thanks to my co-host, Josh Gish Bass, who is kind enough to invite me and two other friends who will remain nameless.
Two of our PAs.
Yeah, sure, two of our PAs, to his Long Island abode in, can I say where we are, or no? Or is that, am I being too specific already?
Yeah, we're in the North Fork of Long Island. And
Cachon,
shout
right?
Out, yeah, shout out to my parents for hosting us.
Barry, Jackie.
Would not want to take credit for it.
Goats. The both of them. Yeah, this is great. We're poolside right now, or pool adjacent, I would say. There's a big tree here. There's a good variety of foliage. And we're excited to discuss two Nets signings. We're going to start off talking about Joey Harris coming back to Brooklyn. Harris and the Nets agreed to a two-year, $16 million contract at the start of free agency. And Josh, I think that was pretty close to what we expected. Maybe the money was a little bit more. I know during the regular season, I think I remember you saying around $5 to $6 million was your expectation, but obviously it finished incredibly strongly. In my mind, at least, like, I don't know if this has been definitively reported, but I think there would have been a strong market for him amongst contenders. Everyone can use a shooter with excellent ability to attack the basket as well, which we're going to get into. But overall, what did you think of the deal?
Yeah, I think it's great, and I don't have a problem with the money being a little bit more than maybe he's worth, because one, he's a homegrown guy, and secondly, the amount of years is shorter. So honestly, 2 years, $16 million is still a very tradable contract. Let's say next year at the deadline, he's half season left, they want to trade that money because they realize they're going in a different direction. A lot of teams are going to have interest in Joe Harris based on what he showed this year. So $8 million on average is fine with the shorter amount of seasons.
Right, no, I'm absolutely okay with it. And in my mind, I don't know, I'd almost rather have given him a longer contract given his developmental curve. And I guess you can make an argument he doesn't really have that far to go up from here with the way he shot the ball last season. But if he can figure out a way to do that over a higher volume, all of a sudden you have a very good starter, and you can argue whether or not that's feasible. I believe he's 25 years old now, 26, excuse me. Yeah, and I don't know how much better he could get. But again, just given the dramatic leap he made last season, if I can get Joe Harris at $8 million a year, I would have almost preferred if it had been over 4 years. But I think that could have been Harris's preference, perhaps, to get back into free agency if he can prove himself to be even better than he showed last season.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense from his perspective. And for the Nets, I mean, these next two seasons for him are going to be his prime, because he's the type of player that relies on a lot more skill than athleticism. So whenever he has a slightest slip off in his athletic ability, he's going to be a pretty big liability, especially on defense. But right now, he's able to hold up. So I think it makes sense for the Nets to get him for these next 2 years. He's a confident player, great shooter to have on the team. He's someone that can plug and play with Dinwiddie, D'Lo, Lynn, whomever. So I think it's a good signing.
Yeah, I guess I get what you're saying, Josh. And I don't know, though. Like, I think like someone like Kyle Korver proves that skill-based shooters, or J.J. Redick's an even better example. Like, to me, like, that's more about staying in really excellent cardio shape. And I get what you're saying, that he could potentially be a liability on the defensive end, but I think he's strong enough and smart enough that he'll always at least be able to hold up on that side of the floor.
Yeah, well, Korver is actually, I think he's bigger than Harris, right? Korver's like a 6'7", 6'8", type guy.
He's 6'7", yeah.
I can't even compare anyone to Korver just because he's far and away one of the best ever in that three-point specialist
role. Yeah, for sure.
And JJ is just, I mean, I think he's a lot more chops as a scorer than Joe does. I mean, Joe's actually pretty good going to the rim, as we talked about all year. He can take advantage when he has a crease. And he's a good shooter, was never a dynamic shooter in college, always someone that whose form looked better than the percentages, up until this year where he really put it together, 42% three-point shooting. But how sustainable is that? Is he going to be dropping down into that 38-39 range, or is he going to stick at that 42 range, which really makes for an excellent offensive player?
Right, no, and you're absolutely right. That's 100% a question worth asking, and I think that's something we should get into right now on the pod. Harris was one of the more efficient scorers in basketball last season. Obviously, he didn't do it with the shot creation load that a lot of other of the most efficient scorers in basketball did. But coming off the bench, he had splits of 49% from the field, 42% from three-point range, and 83% from the foul line. The biggest and perhaps most impressive stat is Harris actually emerged as the league's most efficient scorer when he drove to the basket. Amongst players who had at least four drives per game, Harris shot 63%, 3% ahead of LeBron James, who was in second, and 7% ahead of the third-place guy, James Johnson. That was stunning to me when I looked it up. He was really in a class of his own. The only guy even comparable is arguably the greatest player of all time. And again, I know what you're going to say. He's not doing that over the same sample size. It's not the same degree of difficulty as those guys. And that's absolutely right. But for someone who was never known as a driver, that's pretty amazing.
No, it's great. And I think he's definitely proven that that's his skill. But is he going to shoot 63% next year? No, he'll probably shoot, even if he drops off and still at a very good level, 57, 58%, you mentioned that would still be top three in the league. I mean, I think that's reasonable, but at the same time, that's going to have a huge hit to his overall efficiency.
Yeah, no, and that's a fair point.
But he's still a good player regardless, is right. What I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'm saying if he could, I mean, theoretically, like, I guess it depends on how big of a role you think the European guys are going to play, like whether you think Harris could step it up a little bit or not in terms of scoring. Obviously, Jeremy Lin's going to have the ball in his hands, so maybe the best you could hope for is that he kind of maintains the same production he did last season. But if he can do it over more shots and be slightly less efficient, I'd happily take that trade-off, and I wonder if he has that in him. And he's proven himself to be someone who's extremely committed to his offseason work. I was reading an article on him that Nets.com wrote towards the end of the season, and just about the work he put in the previous offseason to turn himself into such a good driver. He had Nets assistants hold up arm extensions that essentially replicated a 10-foot, 5-inch reach, and he just worked against finishing against that type of size. So it's that type of ingenuity from the Nets player development staff. I know that's not unique, but they did a lot of different stuff with him. And as Harris's commitment to work, that makes me think that he could come back even better next season.
But is he – yeah, no, he could come – I don't know. I feel like this is a career year for him. Is he going to average more than 8 shot attempts per game next year? I just don't see it with D'Lo hopefully being healthy the whole season, Lin coming back, Harris taking a step up, you'd like to think. More perimeter guys in the mix with Zanin and Kirks if he gets some playing time. I just don't think he's going to be averaging 25 minutes a game next year. I think 18 to 20 is more reasonable.
Right, but I don't know. I guess it's like maybe they reassess things, and it depends on how they want to allocate resources. Obviously, they gave Allen Crabbe every chance in the world last year to find some kind of success, and I think we both agree that over the course of the season, Joe Harris was clearly a better player. Obviously, Crabbe maybe a little bit stronger defensively with that extra length, but all in all, I'd rather play Harris, and maybe with a season to sit on it, they reassess that, and they don't reward Crabbe just because he's making a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we find a suitor for Crabbe, and Sean Marks can get him off the books for the 19-20 season. That would be ideal. I just don't necessarily think it's possible, and I guess that Sean Marks, I mean, he signed Crabbe to the initial offer sheet, which Portland matched. He made it a priority to trade for him. I feel like now he's kind of, they're just going to do everything possible to make sure it works. And I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but I think that once they can find a suitor for him and he's on the team, they're going to make it a priority for him to be a focal point of the offense.
But is that just because of his contract, or is that because you think he's a better offensive player than Harris is?
No, he's not a better offensive player. I think it's his contract, and they see something in him that I think me and you don't.
Right.
But whatever untapped potential they see, because he is a pretty good athlete, he just needs to put it all together in terms of being a more efficient, and more diverse scorer. But there's a lot of things that go into that. He's not a great passer. His handle's pretty bad. Jump shot, obviously, last year wasn't as good as advertised. So, Crabbe has a lot of work to do. I think Harris is a much better fit because he's a low-usage player that's much more efficient. But they're going to make it a priority for Crabbe to kind of show what he can do. And hopefully with a full training camp this year, because obviously, remember, he was coming off ankle surgery last year. They're going to see what he has in store for them.
Right, and I don't want to go too far into this because we need to wrap up this first segment and start talking about Ed Davis, the Nets' other signing that we hinted at. But I do want to finish by saying, like, that's always a big frustration of mine when teams double down on their mistakes and they're kind of like, oh, we have to justify this contract we paid this guy. It's the same thing as our friend Agnell trying to justify an unlimited drinks order at brunch and overdoing it. It's the same concept.
Gavin's middle name is Agnell, for those not aware.
That's true. I do talk about myself in third person. All right, this is Gavin Agnell, Philip Schall, and for Josh Bass, we're going to wrap up this first segment of the Locked On Nets podcast, and we will be back talking about Ed Davis.
Attention, cancer victims. If you or a loved one lived, worked, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the 9/11 attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but to anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify.
Welcome back into the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw, alongside Josh Bass, and the Nets signed their backup center. And Josh, it was the guy you predicted, Ed Davis. Want to take a victory lap?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just running around right now. But it's a little, I didn't even say I predicted it, but I said he'd be a great fit. So I'm happy that me and Sean Marks are simpatico on that front.
Sure. And they got him for a great deal. 1 year, $4.4 million. They took advantage of the fact that the Trailblazers had essentially a really chaotic salary situation right now and couldn't even really afford to bring back Davis at that relatively cheap mark. And I did a lot of reading on Davis and a lot of NBA obituaries from the Portland writers, and they were all continually referencing him as the best backup center in the NBA. And like objectively, like I don't necessarily think that's true. Like I'd rather have someone like Montrezl Harrell, who is going to be a starter this year, so maybe you could still make the case. But Davis did a lot of things well last season. Averaged 5 points, 7 rebounds a game in relatively limited minutes. Career high 58% shooting from the field. He had a career high 28.5 defensive rebounding rate, which was easily the best of his career. Wasn't really particularly close. And I think, Josh, he fits exactly what the Nets need, and this is why you thought he'd be kind of an ideal signing for them. He's a great locker room guy. He's low maintenance on the court, only has a 12% usage rate. As we mentioned, solid rebounder, solid defender, functional offensively, just 28 years old, still in his prime, and willing to take not a lot of money. So it was essentially everything the Nets needed, and they don't have to worry about his contract in 2019. So I think it was a perfect deal.
Yeah, and if he plays well this year, they'll definitely be willing to give him a salary bump up. But also, I mean, I've never seen anything like this where Portland fans are just mourning the loss of this guy. I mean, they make it seem like he's a patron saint, which I'm glad to have him on the team because he seems like he's a great locker room guy. Obviously, Damian Lillard tweeted the single tear emoji to response to Woj's tweet that he was coming to the Nets. But I think it's a perfect fit. As you mentioned, Nets really need to get tougher on the boards. He can do that. He's an excellent defender in terms of he's not the best rim protector, but he is very mobile. He can get out on switches, solid post defender, has the length to contest. And again, he's not going to take a lot off the table. He's a really good finisher around the rim. I believe shot 67% at the rim this year, 38.5% from floater range. You know, he's not fitting the mold of guys that are those stretch bigs, but really why he can't play the four anymore. But he's going to be a great five. I think him and Jarrett Allen will mesh well. Hopefully he can give him some tricks and pointers. And be that mentor for him that he was for Zach Collins last year in Portland. So I think it's just a perfect fit on paper. And when you have a center like Allen, he's not going to be playing 35 minutes a game, you know? So I think if he's getting 28 minutes a game, Ed's getting 20 a game, you're going to have 48 minutes of strong center play, always having a role option for the guards on this team. That guys that can finish at the rim, super important in this day and age.
Right, and we've discussed this 48 minutes of great center play. I mean, you're winning the chip if you get to that mark.
I don't see the Warriors having 48 minutes of great center
play. No, I mean, unless they get Dwight, then it's over. But and until that point comes, I'd say the Nets are probably championship favorites. No, but it is really exciting because the Nets' biggest issue last season, I thought, one of their biggest issues, I should say, was a lack of a backup center that could capably guard the brutes of the league. And I think Ed Davis he's drafted in 2010. He's been doing it the last 8 years of his NBA career. Someone who's very functional, very intelligent on the defensive end. And he's going to hold up in those situations. If you're going up against a Joel Embiid, a Dwight Howard, like he's going to be able to come in and spell Allen for a little bit and play good minutes against those guys.
Yeah. He's not like the most bulky guy. He's pretty lean, but he'll do a decent enough job. And you don't really need players that can defend those brutes because they're becoming more and more extinct as we go on. But I think what the Nets really missed with Tyler Zeller going out last year, getting traded, is now Allen was the main center, and then they were trying to piecemeal the rest of the 15, 20 minutes a game without him. And now Ed's just feeling that, and now Kenny Atkinson doesn't need to worry about playing guys like Rondé or Damari at the five, where they're just getting completely abused.
Right, and the best part of this is now they can re-sign Quincy Acey without worrying about having to play him at center. Right, Josh? God.
Have we heard anything about Quincy or Dante's free agency?
I have not. But
that's why we're journalists.
Yeah. We checked with all of our sources. They were unresponsive. All right. A couple quotes on Davis before we wrap this up. Again, this is from an article I read on him, and I didn't write down the author, again, because we are journalists. David, whose hustle-infused blue-collar playing style endeared him to both fans and teammates, quietly evolved into one of the most important pieces on the Blazers roster during his time in Portland.
Let's go.
Quote from Damian Lillard, he's going to go out there with one goal, do whatever he can to help the team. And that's, to me, like, that says everything about the team the Nets want to build. That they had Dwight Howard, that they, I guess they don't know what the buyout is, but I mean, obviously his salary counts towards their cap figure regardless for this season. They had Dwight Howard. They could have just kept Dwight Howard, but they'd rather have someone like Ed Davis, who's not even 20% of the talent that Howard is, but is clearly an infinitely better locker room guy, an infinitely better teammate. And to me, that's kind of encouraging if at any point you were questioning what type of team Sean Marks wants to build. He's sticking to that Spurs model, get in as many good people and intelligent people or players as you possibly can, and let something amazing build out of that. And he's stuck to it.
Yeah, and they call him Shirt Off Ed, which will be great for morale, I guess. I don't know. It's a great nickname. So
no, I think it'll shame people like D'Lo into getting into shape.
Yeah, exactly. I think with the Nets, I mean, it's great to have these role guys around, because even though they're going to increase the team's win total probably into the mid-30s range, into mediocrity, this whole rebuild is going to stem on a few people. That's Jared Allen, that's Caris LeVert, and D'Lo. And if they can become, in D'Lo's case, a star player, in Caris and Jared's case, above-average starters, then things will be looking up. And if not, then we're going to need to rebuild anyway. So it doesn't help or hurt signing these quality veterans to 1 or 2 year contracts, in my opinion, because if it all goes wrong with the guys at the top, then we'll need to rebuild anyway.
Yeah, no, and I think, again, like, Ed Davis is, like, perfectly, like, cutting that line where I don't think he's good enough to dramatically shift the Nets' win total, but he will make them more competitive.
Yeah, he can give 3 wins a year. I'll
sure, we'll take it. All right, we'll wrap up the second segment of this Locked On Nets podcast. When we come back, some rapid-fire thoughts on the rest of free agency on the Locked On Nets podcast. Third and final segment of the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh, LeBron James joined the third team of his career. He's on the Los Angeles Lakers. How crazy would that have been if I told you in like 2008 when he was like playing Kobe every year and that was quote unquote the biggest rivalry in the NBA, that LeBron would eventually fill his shoes and go to the Lakers?
Yeah, honestly, it's still pretty surreal to me. I mean, I feel like LeBron, his whole career, I mean, he's just such an Eastern Conference guy to me. His duels with first the Pistons back in the day, then the Celtics once they got KG and Pierce, even the Nets. I mean, we had some nice battles with him when he was on Cleveland, when he was in Miami the year that we had the two He Who Must Not Be Named players. And I guess his battles with the Warriors, that really extended him to the Western Conference. But I've just never seen any association with him in the Lakers. It just feels like, I know it's been in the works, I'm sure, for months now, if not years, but it just feels random to me to go to a team with nothing right now.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I guess the consensus, it seemed like, from people who were in the know, that this move wasn't going to be about him anymore. Like, he feels like by winning that title in Cleveland, he accomplished what he set out to in his NBA career. And he doesn't feel like he's done yet. I mean, anyone who heard that he broke his hand after J.R. Smith forgot what the score was knows he's still extremely competitive, extremely invested in adding titles. But this move was ultimately about what he thought was best for his family. And I guess that was Los Angeles.
Well, wouldn't the Clippers be better than the Lakers at this point? If considering Paul George re-signed, who knows how stubborn the Spurs are going to be with giving Kawhi up. I feel like the Clippers, honestly, would make more sense.
Right.
Considering before, if they knew LeBron was coming there, they could have, instead of taking Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the extremely random pick of Jerome Robinson, could have done some stuff to play around and maybe get a top-level guy.
No, that's definitely fair. And from an on-the-court perspective, I think there is a pretty compelling argument to be made just because the supplemental pieces on the Clippers are kind of ideal to LeBron's game, even though there's not a second star there. And obviously, it seems, as things stand right now, it's more feasible that LA ends, or the Lakers end up with that second star. But reading Lee Jenkins' piece today, it sounded like another significant component of it was the fact that Magic Johnson's there. And Magic is essentially everything LeBron aspires to be, a five-time champion, unquestioned legacy, and one of the first athletes to become a billionaire thanks to their business acumen on top of their brilliant basketball career.
Yeah, and I don't want to diss the Clippers brass because they do have Jerry West there as one of the lead decision makers. But yeah, I think the allure of the Lakers and Magic and Kareem and following the legacy of guys like Kobe, I think it's appealing to LeBron. But I don't know. I feel like it sounds great for now, but after 3 months of playing with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and I guess Lonzo and dealing with the whole LeVar thing and who knows if they re-sign guys like Randall. I just think he's going to see, like, okay, this team can win 50 games with me, but are we going to get out of the second round?
And they won't necessarily. Like, if they don't get Kawhi, I think, like, that's a very real scenario. Because
they won't be a top two seed.
Well, because that's the crazy thing. The rest of the West just absolutely reloaded. Like, outside of the Kings, like, do you see a team that would be below average in the East? Like, you can make an argument for the Suns because they're extremely young, but there's a ton of talent there now. And you feel like on any given night, they could beat someone. Even the Mavericks, after getting DeAndre Jordan, they're going to be semi-competent.
Memphis, if Conley's health is poor. But, I mean, still, if him and Gasol come back.
Or healthy.
Jaren Jackson is a really nice addition for them.
Yeah.
I do see what you're saying. There's no easy nights. There's no Orlando. There's no Nets. There's no Knicks.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely insane. And just the sheer imbalance. Like, it makes me kind of, even as a Nets supporter, purely in a podcast capacity, I kind of wish the NBA would go to 1-16 seeding. Because even with the Celtics and Sixers potentially being very, very good, I don't know. It just doesn't strike me as extremely interesting. It seems like there are two teams in the East and there are 10 in the West.
Yeah, I want to see Denver. I want to see Minnesota. I want to see these teams, even the Clippers. I want to see them make the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen. All right, other free agent signing. I guess just big picture stuff. My big takeaway from free agency was this is just another massive win for the Warriors when they least needed it, because I was kind of hoping for a massive consolidation of talent, maybe for the Rockets to add someone surprisingly on top of bringing all their guys back. And then for the Lakers to form a superstar triumvirate of Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and LeBron. And that clearly didn't happen. And again, there's a lot of very good teams in the West. But I think at this point, there's not one that's really going to challenge the Warriors. You can make a case for the Rockets, but I genuinely believe losing Trevor Ariza is a big deal.
Yeah, because even if Luke Richard and Mbamute comes back, he's still not as good as Ariza. And that was a big thing that Rockets fans pointed to last year, in addition to Chris Paul missing Game 6 and 7, that they didn't have LRMAM. But honestly, JaVale was a pretty decent loss for them because he was good in the playoffs. And depending on what happens, Looney, they renounced his rights early last season. So they're going to be thin on depth. They need to make sure they keep stockpiling these veteran minimum guys that want to come there. Because as Iguodala gets older, if Draymond happens to lose a step, which you don't think is going to happen, if Steph gets injured, now their margin for error is thinning out a bit. And LeBron, you know, regardless of the team he has around him, he'll take every opportunity. And he could just be completely revitalized by playing in a new city, new team, new fans. So who knows what's going to happen. And it's only July 2nd, so we still have a lot of runway ahead of us before the season starts.
I'll throw this out there. If the Sixers find a way to get Kawhi, that's the team that would scare me if I'm the Warriors. That type of defensive versatility, if they can theoretically do it without giving up Covington, you start those two with Simmons and Embiid, that's the team that can throw size at Steph, kind of intimidate him a little bit, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he's still dropped 40 on them, but has guys that they can throw at Durant. And, like, those two are so incredible offensively, you're not going to stop them. But maybe you could shut down the rest of the Warriors. I don't know. That's the team that's kind of interesting to me.
I don't know. I think it would definitely help them, and I think they'd be able to really put up a great series against Boston. But they did lose a ton of depth. I mean, Ilyasova was incredible for them in the playoffs, especially against Miami. He was just doing all the dirty work, keeping balls alive, getting a lot of deflections, hitting threes. And Bellinelli is good for a game or two where he just goes off, and he's super inconsistent, but losing two guys that are a part of their rotation in the playoffs is going to hurt.
Yeah, and if they had kept someone like Bridges, that would have been a little bit more encouraging.
Yeah,
but again,
here's a project.
But again, right, if you have Kawhi and like a guy who, like, I think these people always emphasize his defensive abilities, he was one of the best shooters in the NBA the two seasons before he didn't get hurt. So I don't know. I mean, to me, like that kind of makes up for it.
I think they'd be better than Boston if they got Kawhi.
I 100% agree with you. All right, that is it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Me and Josh are going to go watch the end of Brazil-Mexico and then have ourselves a pool day. And I hope all of you listening have an incredible July 4th weekend. And we'll be back the next time the Nets sign someone.